They say that when the Tanoim and the rabbis generations ago used to go to talk to the Romans about government issues that are relevant to the Jewish community, they used to learn the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach before they went. Because the back and forth between Yaakov and Esav in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, he sent him presents, he spoke to him. The way he spoke to him, there's many, many, many different layers. There's unspoken threats, there's Hanifa, there's trying to calm him down. All at the same time, Yaakov was able to weave together these statements that had many layers that Esav was able to hear the whole picture if he listened carefully. And for us, we could pull out on many, many different levels a lot of lessons about the relationship between the Jewish people and the rest of the world from this week's parsha, this confrontation between Yaakov and Esav. So the beginning of the parsha, Yaakov sends messengers, malachim, real malachim, not real malachim, it's machlekes, to Esav. And he says to them, tell Esav that I lived with Lavan until now. In Lavan garti, I lived with Lavan. Garti means I lived, but it's a temporary living. The word ger, we know that the word ger means a stranger. So garti means I lived as a stranger. I didn't grow roots there. I lived there as a stranger. Rashi says, I didn't become chashev, I didn't become a nobleman. I'm a stranger. So don't be so jealous of me that I tricked you and I got our father's brachas, because it didn't work. Because our father said that I would become a master, gevir, samtiv, I would become a master, and I haven't, I'm a stranger. And then he goes on and he says, I have oxen and donkeys, vahili shor v'chamor, tzayin, sheep, ve'eved v'shifcha, and servants and maidservants. He tells Esav that he's been matzliach in business, he's coming back a wealthy man, he has animals and servants. So Rashi says again, he says, our father said that I would have from the dew of the heaven and from the shmani earth, from the fats of the earth. Our father blessed me with earth field wealth. You know, orchards and vineyards. That's what our father benched me with. I don't have an orchard. I don't have a vineyard. I don't have wheat. I don't have any of the things that our father blessed me with. I have sheep. I have cattle. I have all those things, but that wasn't part of the bracha. So don't be jealous of me about it. Which is very odd, because, I mean, that what Yaakov Avinu was doing. He's telling Esav, don't worry that I took the brachas. They didn't work anyway. A little strange thing. And why didn't they work? What's Yaakov trying to say? Is Yaakov saying that he doesn't believe in the bracha of Esav? In the bracha of Yitzchak? He doesn't believe it's going to work? There's other things here that raise eyebrows. Tell my master Esav that Koy Omar Avducha Yaakov, that this is what your servant Yaakov said. Yaakov is Esav's servant? Is that what Yitzchak said? Yitzchak told Yaakov that he's the master, not the servant. So you'll say, because he wanted to make Esav feel good. He was sending him a whole present. He wanted to make him feel good, so he called himself a servant. Okay, Yaakov is the Ish Emes. You don't think that he would lie like that just to make him feel good. But even if that were the case, later on, he tells the servants, go tell my master Esav the following. He wasn't talking to Esav. He was talking to his servants. If I want to say that you're my master when I'm talking to you, that's one thing. I don't have to say it when I'm talking about you, if I don't think it's true. If Yaakov said it not just when he was talking to Esav, but when he was talking about Esav, tell my master Esav the following. He could have just said, tell Esav. He wasn't talking to Esav. There seems to be something that he saw, some quality that he saw in Esav that made Esav his master. What was that? When we were at Glenn's house for Shabbos, I said over a mahalach in Parshas Toldos. I want to say over now a little part of it, because I think that that's the key to understand this parsha also. Many, many, many difficult questions in Parshas Toldos when Yaakov and Esav are born, and Yitzchak loves Esav and decides to give him the brachas. Yitzchak was a very, very, very wise man. He was the second Av. he was an elder statesman. He was well known. He was wealthy. He was influential. He was not like we get this picture of some kind of silly, senile old man sitting in a corner. That's not what Yitzchak was. Yitzchak was the Gadol Hadar by Yidden and by Goyim. They say that he was much, much wealthier than Avimelech. They used to say about Yitzchak, we'd rather pick Yitzchak's garbage than take from Avimelech's storehouses. That's how wealthy he was. And that wealth, I'm not just saying it as a description of his wealth, but as a description of his influence. And his far and his intelligence. And he felt that Esav was the person who should get the brachas. How could that be? You think he totally did not realize that Yaakov spent all day learning the Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshev Eholim? Yaakov spent all day learning Torah, and Esav was the Ish Sade. Esav spent all day out in the fields. Could it be that Yisro didn't realize that? These are basic questions everybody asks when they learn the parasha. Like, where was he? Where was Yitzchak? So some want to say that of course Yitzchak knew. Of course Yitzchak knew that Esav was the man out there in the fields. And he gave him the bracha because he wanted him to be successful so that he could support Yaakov, like Yisachar and Zevulun. That's what some want to say. But immediately another host of questions comes up if we say that. Because if you read the brachas carefully, you'll see that he didn't just say that Esav should be successful. He said that he was talking to Yaakov, but he thought he was talking to Esav. He said, in his opinion, that he was talking to Esav, that Esav should be Yaakov's master. And if he knew that Yaakov was really the one who's sitting and learning, he's the gadol, he's where it's at, and he just wants Esav to be successful to support Yaakov, so don't make the supporter the master and the person getting supported the servant. That doesn't make sense. That's one serious issue that we grapple with, the Parshas Toldos. In addition to that, we're all familiar, this is one of the things that we learned when we were very, very young, when Yaakov went into Yitzchak, and Yitzchak said, "Are you Esav?" And he said, "Anoichi Esav b'chayrecha." I am Esav, your oldest son. And we know that Yaakov wouldn't lie. So Rashi says, "I am who I am, and Esav is your oldest son." That's what Rashi said, that's what he meant. That's the Pashup Shat. But still, we search for something deeper in Yaakov's meaning. Okay, so it wasn't a full lie, it was just an implied lie. I would not consider a person who spoke to me that way in business honest. Imagine you tell someone, "I'll pay you $100,000. No, what I meant was, I'm me, and someone will pay you $100,000. That's really what I meant. That's not honest. Still, where's the emes of Yaakov? So we're searching for something a little deeper to understand what Yaakov meant. So for this, we have to rewind even more and go to Parshas Bereishis. And it's not a bad thing for us to go back to Parshas Bereishis a couple of times during the year, because we usually have about 2 days or 3 days to learn Parshas Bereishis, and it's one of the longest and most complex parshias. And I want to talk about a part of the parasha that we almost never discuss, and that's Cain and Hevel. Cain and Hevel were the two sons of Adam and Chava. They were born in Gan Eden, and they each got a job. Cain worked the ground, and Hevel was a shepherd. Hevel took care of animals. Cain brought a carbon to Hashem, and Hevel brought a carbon to Hashem. Hevel's carbon was accepted, Cain's was not. And Cain felt terrible. Charoloi. He felt tremendous pain. Tremendous tsar. Vayomer Hashem el Cain, and Hashem said to Cain, "Lama charoloch? Why are you in pain? V'lama naflu panecha? Why has your face fallen? Halayim teitiv? If you'll do good, se'es, you'll be lifted." We'll have to see what that means. And if you won't do good, you're going to get yourself into a lot of trouble. What does it mean, if you'll do good, you'll be lifted? What does that mean? So the Ramban over there on the Pasuk says words that I think we need to define. He says, Hashem was telling Cain, "Cain, you're the Bechor. You're the older one, you're the Bechor. If you work hard to do well, you'll be even higher than Hevel. That's what Hashem was telling him. Even though Hevel, his carbon was accepted, and Cain's carbon was not accepted, and Cain was upset that his carbon wasn't accepted, Hashem was telling Cain, if you'll do good and Tativ, you'll be even higher than Hevel. How is that? I think it's possible, I'm saying this as a suggestion, I didn't see this anywhere, it's possible that it's rooted in the beginning of what each person, Cain and Hevel, did for a living. Cain worked the ground, and Hevel didn't want to work the ground. Rashi says that Hevel didn't want to work the ground because it was cursed. Because after Adam did his chait, the ground was cursed. And Hevel felt that he wanted to keep away from the ground that was cursed. The animals are a little bit more removed from the ground. So he's going to work with animals, but the ground, the actual ground that's cursed, he's going to stay away from. Cain didn't stay away from the ground. So I was wondering if it could be that that does not show something bad or neglectful about Cain. Maybe it shows something very ambitious about Cain. Hevel didn't feel prepared to take on the ground. It was cursed. I'm not going to be able to serve Hashem properly with the ground, whatever the avodah was. I'm going to keep away from it. I don't feel like I can uplift. I can affect a cursed ground. But Cain, as the Bechor, he felt like his job is to tackle the difficult stuff. The ground was cursed because man did an Aveira. I'm going to work the ground. And that work was physical work, but that work also included a tremendous amount of spiritual work. I'm going to try to be misakin in the ground. That's much harder work. The sheep weren't cursed. The ground was. So when Hevel brought a carbon, it was much easier for him to bring an appropriate carbon. For Cain, it was more difficult. It was a cursed ground. It was a harder job. It was difficult work. So Cain brought his carbon and it wasn't accepted. So Hashem told Cain, patience. Your job is harder than Hevel's. Imitative, if you'll do well, if you'll keep working. Se'ace, you'll be even more than Hevel. You're the Bechor, you have to take on the harder job. You could be even greater than Hevel. Hevel is considered the more ruchnius of the two. But Cain was the one who was ambitious enough to take on the more difficult job, the more physical, the more mundane, the cursed. Hashem said, Tativ says, but Cain wasn't interested, and Cain was downhill from there, and he killed Hevel, and he gave up all the potential of what he could have been. If Cain would have been Mativ, if Cain would have tackled the job properly, he would have been greater than Hevel, not just because he did a harder job, but because what he did is more in line with why the world was created. Hashem did not have to create a physical world. He could have just created spiritual worlds. Hashem created a physical world because Hashem has a desire. Ratza HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem wants La'aseis Le'dira B'tachtoinim. Hashem wants to sanctify the mundane, to bring up that which is low, to bring light to places that are dark. That's the Ratzon Hashem in this world. The purpose of this world is to take the physical and to make it spiritual. That's the purpose. So who would have been closer to fulfilling the purpose of the world, Cain or Hevel? Cain would have been. Because Cain went even deeper into the physical world, into the cursed world, into the mundane world, and he lifted it up. So in Tativ says, if you would have done good, you would have been even more in line with what the tachlis of the world is. And it's possible that that's what Yitzchak had in mind when he saw he had two children. He had Yaakov, who learns all day, Yoshev Ayhalim. He's attached to spirituality. He's a Yoyrish of the... Eventually he learns in the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'ever. He learns Yoshev Ayhalim. He learns by Shem and Ever. Yoshev Ayhalim, Chazal say. He learns by Avram and by Yitzchak. He learns all the Torah of the Avos. He absorbs all that spirituality, all that connection to Ruchnius. That's Yaakov's job. But Yitzchak told himself, that's not why Hashem created the world. That's necessary. But there's a piece missing. And that piece is taking that Beis Medrash, taking that learning, taking that spirituality, and attaching it to the world, spreading it throughout the world, being mala, the physical, living a physical life, living a quote-unquote mundane life, but making it not mundane, making it holy, making it special. Yaakov's not doing that. Yaakov is in the Beis Medrash all day. So Yitzchak felt that Esav, if he'll have that proper relationship with Yaakov, which wasn't going to be, but if he'll have that proper relationship with Yaakov, he can take the ruchnius that Yaakov brings down into this world and spread it throughout the world. He's the Ish Sada. He's the one who's out there. Yitzchak saw this as a beautiful partnership to bring out the tachlis of the world. Yaakov will bring ruchnius into this world, and Esav will spread it throughout the world. He'll be out there planting the fields, plowing, dealing with people, spreading the word of Hashem. And Yaakov will be secluded in his Beis Medrash, making sure that the ruchnius is pouring down into this world so that Esav has the ruchnius there at his disposal to spread throughout the world. Yitzchak saw a beautiful picture of two brothers accomplishing the tachlis of the world together. And Yitzchak wanted that Yaakov should be subservient to Esav. Yaakov should be a servant to Esav. Why? Because Esav is the one who's actually doing the tachlis of the Bria. Not to knock Yaakov. Not to say that Yaakov's work isn't vital. It's vital. Nothing can be without it. But it's to serve with the purpose. What's the purpose? The purpose is it's spreading and filling. Umala ha'aretz deyo es Hashem. The whole world being full of knowledge of Hashem. That's the purpose. So Yitzchak said to Esav, I want Yaakov to serve you so that you could take that ruchnius and spread it throughout the world. And Yitzchak's bracha is a physical bracha. The earth, the heaven, the earth, grain, produce, it's a physical bracha because that's where he wanted Esav to spread the spirituality that he absorbs from Yaakov. But Rivka got a nevuah. Olai is Amar b'nevuah, the Targum says. Rivka got a nevuah from Hashem that even though Yitzchak felt that Esav had the quality to be able to do that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Rivka that it wasn't right. Esav is not capable of doing that. Esav is not capable of taking Yaakov's Kedusha and spreading it throughout the world. Yaakov has to go get that bracha. What's the message there? Yaakov has to do both sides. Yitzchak's mistake was that he thought that the two jobs could be divided by two people. Yaakov will be involved in the ruchnius, Esav will spread the ruchnius throughout the world. That was a mistake. Esav is not capable of doing that, or not willing to do that.
Could you say that just like the Cain and Hevel with Chathila, it was a possibility, but Cain messed up, the same thing is true with Esav and Hevel?
It could be, I don't know. We'll see as we go on, maybe a little more. So Yaakov understood that it's not enough for him to be Yaakov. He has to be Yaakov and he also has to be Esav. He has to do the role of Yaakov, but he also has to fill the role of Esav. And he went in to take the brachas. Yitzchak said, are you Esav? And he said, Anoichi Esav b'chayrecha. I am Esav. It was the truth. Because he got a nevuah from Hashem that his job is not just to be Yaakov, but his job is to be Esav as well. Anoichi Esav b'chayrecha. I am Esav. Because Esav wasn't being Esav. Esav wasn't doing the job that Esav was supposed to do. So Yaakov had to be Yaakov and Esav. Esav was the Bechor. Yitzchak thought the Bechor, just like Cain was the Bechor. Esav was the Bechor. Yitzchak thought that as a Bechor, Esav should do that. But Yitzchak didn't know that Esav wasn't the Bechor anymore. He had sold his Bechor to Yaakov. I was in Toronto on last Sunday, and I was by Yavart, and I was talking to someone who's a parent of someone in yeshiva, and we were talking about this parsha, and I was telling him over some of these things, and he told me, and it's beautiful in its clarity. He said that everybody knows from yesterday's parsha that there were two sisters, Rachel and Leah, and there were two brothers, Yaakov and Esav, and everyone said that Rachel should marry Yaakov and Leah should marry Esav. But what happened? Rachel and Leah both married Yaakov. Because Yaakov was Yaakov and Esav. Because Yaakov had to do the job of Yaakov and Esav. So the proper wife for Yaakov and the proper wife for Esav, the tzaddik, were both, had one address, Yaakov. Because Yaakov has two jobs. He has to do the Yaakov job and the Esav job. So the one who was, they were right when they said that Leah is supposed to go to Esav. But they meant Esav, who would be a tzaddik, who would be accomplishing his job in this world. Who took over that job? Yaakov did. So Leah married Yaakov. Thought that was beautiful. Now Yaakov spent a couple of years in Lavan's house, and he's heading back to Eretz Yisrael. And Yaakov is thinking to himself, Reb Tzadik says, that Lemaisa, my father did think that Esav could do it. My father did see something in Esav. Maybe I should offer it to him again. Maybe I should provide him with another chance. Maybe I should suggest to Esav that if he'll join me in serving Hashem, he'll be the greater one. He'll be the one who's accomplishing the tachlis of the world. My father did see something in him. Maybe I should provide that chance to him again. And that was part of the depth of the messages that Yaakov was sending to Esav. Koy Omar Achicha Yaakov. This is what your brother Yaakov says. We're brothers. We can work together. Avdecha Yaakov. I'm Yaakov, your servant. He meant that. If you'll do tshuva, Reb Tzadik says, if you'll do tshuva, you'll be much higher than me. Because like Kayin and Tetiv says, if you'll do tshuva, if you'll do good, you can accomplish even more than I can. Because you'll be closer to the Tachlis Abriya. This is what you should say to my master Esav, to the Esav who has the capacity to be my master. In Tetiv says. And perhaps, and I'm saying this perhaps, that's what's going on here. He tells Esav, it's true, our father gave me the brachas. I'm supposed to be the one to work the fields, to attach myself to the physical. Besides for my being Yoshev Eholim and learning and absorbing Ruchnias, I'm supposed to be in the fields. I'm supposed to be attacking the Adama Asher Eiraru Hashem. I'm supposed to be working the field that Hashem cursed, trying to bring the Ruchnias into that level. I'm supposed to be Shakua in this world. But in Lavan Garti, I'm only a stranger in this world. Esav, you have a talent here, Esav. You live in this world. I'm just a stranger here. He was selling his product to Esav. He was showing Esav where he needs him, where Esav can come in for him. And then he tells him, "Vayhili sharva chamor, I have animals. I'm doing a good job at Hevel's job. I'm being a good Hevel. I have animals. But I don't have any land." That's what he was saying. The bracha was mitala shemayim u'mishmani ha'aretz, which are the growth of the ground. That's Kayin's job. He was saying, Esav, the job is still open. We still have a job opening here for you to do Kayin's job. And Tetiv says, I'm doing the Shar V'chamor. That's true. I could do Hevel's job. But Esav, there's still room for you. I still need you. Come join me and do Kayin's job. Esav refused. Esav refused. He came with 400 men. He wanted to kill Yaakov. Through Hashem's intervention, he was incapable of doing that. But Esav refused. He's not interested. It's possible. But that's what happened. What happened right after Yaakov finished talking to Esav? Right afterwards, the next thing that happens is that Yaakov buys some land. He bought a piece of land in Eretz Yisrael. I don't know, but perhaps Yaakov was saying, I tried to get Esav to do the land. He was the one who was supposed to do the land. He refused. I see my mother was right. I have to be Yaakov, and I have to be Esav. I have to be Kayin, I have to be Hevel, but I also have to be Kayin. It's my job to work the land. And the next thing that he does after is, Vayiken eschelkas asad, he buys himself a piece of land. Maybe that represents Yaakov's understanding, there's no giving it to Esav anymore. Esav, we tried once, we tried twice, Esav gave it up. He sold the Bechayra, he was Mavaza the Bechayra, he tried to kill me, and then when I offered it to him again, he tried to kill me again, it's over. We'll meet by Har Seir one day. Until then, Vayikin Eschelkas Asada, Yaakov has a job to do. Yaakov has to go down to the depths of the Gashmiyistic world and spread Hashem's word. And that's an amazing insight in the job of Yidden. it's not enough for us to stay in a corner and to absorb Ruchnius. We have to be Yaakov and we have to be the Esav of Kedusha. We have to absorb spirituality and then we have to go out and we have to display it. We have to proudly show our attachment to a spiritual, to a moral Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Rav Hirsch built a whole philosophy on this Yisoid, which, even though there were many Gedolim that said that we don't paskin like Rav Hirsch and so on, but we live his life right now. He's halachas kamaisei right now. Because right now, we live in a world where we do have secular studies, and we do live amongst Goyim, and we do business with Goyim, and we're very exposed, and we're very involved in the happenings of the world. We're not in Kamenetz or in Mir or in Baranovich, locked away in a ghetto or in a small town separated from the whole world. That's not the reality right now that we live in. Right now we live in a reality where we're visible and where the world is visible to us. And we have to take a lesson from this week's parasha. Rav Shamsher Fol Hirsch, page after page after page, he wrote, he spoke, he begged, he tried to explain to people that it's not just about isolating ourselves from Goyim, even though there are times that we have to do that, but it's also about being proud enough of our Yiddishkeit and confident enough of our Yiddishkeit that we're the mashpiyim, we're the one who's affecting instead of getting affected. The biggest sakana of the Torah says is vayis'arvu b'goyim, they got mixed in amongst the nations, vayilmedu mima'aseihem, and they learned from their actions. It's not our job to go and learn from the actions of the Goyim. It's our job to go out there and to be that moral light, to be that example. And you'll find, and we found many times, that when a person sticks true to his principles, that's when he gets the respect of a guy. Not when he shows the guy that he can sink down to the same level that he's on. That's not where you get the respect of a guy. And anybody who works amongst Goyim knows that I'm right about that. They say this great story, I don't know if it's true, but it's very, I heard it from a few places. They say that that Donald Trump was doing a deal with one of the very, very wealthy people in the Jewish community. And this man came with his son-in-law to finalize the deal. There were many, many, many millions of dollars at stake over here. I think he was buying from Trump $600 million. Shalom says it was a $600 million package. He was the buyer, right? I'd rather not on the... So. So Trump, it seems, now you'll correct me if the story's right. It seems that Trump told this fellow that his son-in-law would be a good candidate for The Apprentice. Is that right?
With his son.
With his son?
Yeah.
Oh, with his son. That was his. That's what he said.
That was
a good candidate. Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, then we know it's a true story.
Yeah, it's a true story.
He said that he would be a good candidate for The Apprentice. So he said, "What's The Apprentice?" He said, "You know, The Apprentice. What do you mean? What's The Apprentice?" He says, "Do you watch TV?" He's like, I don't have a TV." He says, "Do you mean to say that I just sold $600 million worth of property to a man who doesn't own a TV?" But there's something beautiful about being able to show that I'm a man of the world and I'm sophisticated enough to deal with all kinds of people and impressive enough and eloquent and verbal and educated enough to be part of the world. A $600 million package is not a small package. And yet I can stay true to my principles. And even more so, that I'm not ashamed to say it. Because if I would have been there, I might have said, yeah, The Apprentice. I wonder what that is. That's what I might have done. But just because, I don't know what you're talking about. I had many, many stories. I've said over a lot of them before. I've had many stories myself when my wife was in school here in Connecticut. And when we came, a frum person in southern, now there were a few more, not too many more, but a few frum person in Southern Connecticut State University was not a common sight. And my wife came there, and her chinuch, Baruch Hashem, is a very, very, very strong one. And she did some things that people thought were very strange. And the end result was just earning respect. It was an amazing thing. Story. I have many stories. I'll tell you one or two. I have many stories. But just incredible. There are embarrassing stories and there are cool stories. My point more is the embarrassing stories. She had a teacher, a few stories with this teacher, because she did a research. She was awarded with, I think, $10,000 to do a research project. And she did a whole project with sending out things to physicians that you know, to find out certain things and then to analyze the data, and a whole complex research project which was later published. So when they were sending out these letters to physicians, to pediatricians, so the teacher told her, put it together in envelopes, I'll go into the school office and I'll use their stamp machine and I'll mail it out. So she said, fine. And she started doing it. As she's doing it, she's thinking to herself, are you allowed to do that? Like, she didn't have permission from the college to use their stamp machine. That costs money. That means the college is going to pay for her postage. They're giving her $10,000 to do the research, but they didn't say that you could use any other things on campus. It's true. It's just a few cents per envelope. They should send out 40 envelopes. You can make the cheshbon, 37 cents times 40. It's not a huge amount of money, but stealing is stealing. She called back up her teacher. She says, I'm sorry, but I have to tell you, I'm uncomfortable with using the stamp machine of the school. It's not my money. So he said, then he told her, no, you don't have to be worried. I specifically got permission for you and so on. But it was a hard call to make. It would have been so much easier to just, okay, you know, it's a few cents, you know, put it in. You know, probably it's okay. He's a teacher. To be able to stick to your principles. I don't steal. I don't steal. I don't take something that's not mine. She calls up the teacher. It's a chutzpah. She calls up the teacher. She said it as respectfully as possible, but she wasn't comfortable with it. And even more uncomfortable was the time that she was sitting in a room and they were having a meeting and he got up and shut the door. And it's yichud, especially in a teacher's office where a student is not going to barge in on him. So there's a real shail of yichud. And it was very difficult, and I wonder myself if I would have been able to pass that test. But she told him, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask you to open that door. You know, he could have gotten really insulted at that. What are you suspecting me of? What do you think I am? You know, he's a dignified person. But he didn't take it that way. She just earned his respect. Story after story after story, but I'll just tell you one more. That the final when she left school, so she graduated, and I've never been to a college graduation before, till that one, and I was blown away. It's amazing. Thousands and thousands of graduates, caps, gowns, the hoods with different colors, and unbelievable. I was blown away from it. But the problem is that when you go up to get your diploma, the president of the school, the dean is a woman, so that wasn't an issue, but the president of the school shakes your hand, and my wife does not shake hands with men. And there are thousands of people there, and we almost thought that maybe she should skip the graduation. She was not, what was she going to do, standing on stage in front of thousands of people, go like that? What was she going to do? So she spoke to the dean beforehand, and they were very understanding. We'd been through this before when she had to present her research findings, and they were very understanding. And I was there with, you can ask Avrami Kalashina, he was there also, he came with me then, he was a bacher, we drove together to the graduation. I wanted to sit next to someone I knew. And my wife came up, cap, gown, everything, big gold medallion, and she got her diploma. And the president, they had worked it out before, the president of the school goes like this, goes, congratulations. She said, thank you very much. And then he immediately turns to the woman next to him and goes, how did I do? But there's pride in serving Hashem. We have nothing to be ashamed of. And we only earn the disrespect of Goyim when Goyim see us disrespecting ourselves. If we act with respect to them, and respect to ourselves. That's the message over here. That's Yaakov doing Yaakov and Esav's job. I think in a community it's a very, very important thing to realize. People make a mistake of thinking, and this is such a prevalent mistake and such a big mistake, that you have a community, so the people who are the Rabbeim in a community, or the Rosh Hashiva, or so on, they're the important people in the community. And then there's all the civilians. The working people, they're the civilians. It's not that way. And if you look, Rav Hirsch says it's mefurish, more than one place. The tachlis of being in this world is to take ruchnias and spread it throughout the world. That's what we're doing here. Those people that have that tremendous responsibility to go out there and to, with pride in the lifestyle that they lead, live amongst Goyim with pride and with sensitivity, they're the tachlis. They're the purpose. Anoichi Esav v'charecha. Yaakov, we can't let Esav do that job. Yaakov has to do it. And the balabatim of a community are that Yaakov of our community. They're the people. It's a relationship. It's the community is useless and can't survive any other way. This is an absolute necessity. It's not just a necessity, but it's the tachlis. Who knows why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to be a community in Waterbury? Who knows who Hashem wanted us to affect or what Hashem wanted us to do? But just having a Beis Medrash alone is not going to accomplish it. The Beis Medrash is vital. Nothing can start without a Beis Medrash. And everyone needs a relationship with that Beis Medrash. But just there, if you just cut it off there, so it's only half of Yaakov's job. It's a necessity. It's vital. Nobody should feel, and it's something that I've noticed sometimes, it's a big mistake, especially in Hashkaf, it's a mistake. Nobody's anonymous over here. Nobody's unimportant. Nobody's not charged with the full mission of what Klal Yisrael is doing in this Golus. We have a mission to accomplish. Someone who's working and he's dealing with Goyim, dealing with all different types of people, dealing with all different types of situations, delicate situations, much more delicate situations than can come up when someone gets up in the morning, goes to 3 Star in a day and goes to sleep. Much more delicate situations. That person, he's being charged with the full mission of what Klal Yisrael has to accomplish. He's not, we live in a society, unfortunately, that deranged this idea into being that the person who's doing that, he's not doing what he was supposed to do. It's the people that are learning, they're the ones who are doing what they're supposed to do. That's not what the Torah teaches us, with all due respect. That's not what the Torah teaches us. The Torah teaches us that the person who's out there is doing the tachlis of the Bria. Ratzak HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'asas le'dira b'tachtayim. There's no anonymity, there's no unimportance, there's no the community could go on without me. The community can't function without you. It's a very, very necessary thing. And who knows if we could be mischazak in this, if we could have a community where from far and wide, all corners of the world, people will know that people in Waterbury, they do business with integrity, with pride. They care about each other. They stand up for each other. They're there to help in the community. They're there to help. Rav Hirsch writes Barichas about how a Jewish community has to be involved in the affairs of the city that they live in. It's a Gemara. Make sure that the city is doing well, that we're there, that we care. That we care about the politics that are going on, that we care about if someone's gonna be in office or doing something or taking care of something that's gonna be not to our standards of morality, of honesty, of integrity, of accomplishment, of moving forward. That bothers us. Not everyone is cut out for that job, but the people that are doing it are doing the tachlis. That's the tachlis. That a guy should be able to sit somewhere in who knows where in Waterbury and say, there's a Jewish community that's involved and cares about people, that cares about community, that cares about growth, that care about each other, and all of that with an unbelievable devotion to their God.